This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 101, Camera Movements in Photography, an interview with Michael Orton. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 101st podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and this time we're coming to you from Nanaimo in British Columbia, Canada. For today's show, we're going to talk about deliberately moving your camera during the exposure, and normally that's a no-no, but Michael Orton has created some extraordinary photographs by using complex camera movements during the exposure, and we're going to talk about that today. But before we get into it, as always, I like to thank people for their last comments on our last podcast, number 100, where we talked about shoot in any light whatsoever. And Patrick, Glenn Uloth, and Bambi all left comments and so greatly appreciated. Thanks so much. As always, the preferred way to get those comments is directly in the blog, photography.ca/blog. But of course, you can comment anyway in the forums. Just make your way to the forums on photography.ca or just send an email at any time at photography.ca@gmail.com. All right, then, without further hesitation, let's get into the interview with Michael Orton now.
So I'm here with a very special guest, Michael Orton, and today we're going to talk about camera movement in photography. Michael has been doing this for many, many, many years, and he's recently developed a resurgence, or he's coming up with really new work in a new way, and we're going to talk about that today. So first off, welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for doing this.
Hi, Michael. Welcome to Nanaimo.
Thanks so much. I'm actually at Michael's house. Michael invited me here graciously, Michael and Mary. And oh my God, it's such a treat to be here. I saw some of Michael's latest work on the computer last night, and it's just awesome. But before we get into Michael's new work, let's just kind of talk about movement in photography in general. So you've been doing this for a while, and basically this involves moving the camera during the exposure.
Yes.
And rather than me talk about it, I'd rather just like to hear about how you got involved in that, why you did it, and a little bit of how you're doing it, perhaps.
Well, it's not a new thing for me. Moving the camera, I believe a lot of photographers have done this for years and years. So it's not a radical approach to photography, but it is a very freeing way of using your camera. I've used a big tripod, and the conventional photographer's mindset of not moving the camera, and I've done a lot of that, mostly for stock photography, of course. But in the last few years, I've just got to the point where I needed something different and was looking to surprise myself, I suppose, is a way of saying it. And so I went back to camera movement. And of course, it's all handheld, very simple tools. I don't have a complicated camera kit. To me, it's much like painting. I look at what I see around me, as raw material. Years and years ago, I kind of worded this in a different way, in that I would see the landscape as wet paint. Just imagine what you're looking at being literally wet paint, and the camera that you're using is a piece of white paper. And when you put the white paper against that paint and then move it, the resultant image is the same as moving your camera. And that's kind of a way of turning it around a little bit, but that's kind of the mindset that I sort of think with. And that's, you know, maybe photographers don't think that's a way of considering photography in photographic terms, but it works for me.
For sure, because at the end of the day, just in case people don't know, typically, as Michael said, you know, photographers are not going to move their cameras. It's like verboten.
It's a no-no.
It's a no-no. It's, yeah. It's blasphemy.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Because it compromises sharpness.
Yes.
So typically, you know, and I say this all the time, especially to beginners, you know, you're taking a shot of a person. It has to be at 1/60th of a second or faster, because you are going to introduce movement into the camera, or your subject will be moving, and therefore you will get blur. Therefore, camera movement is bad. In this case, it's your friend, because yeah. I've said this many times before. Once you know the rules, you can break the rules. And Michael is typically doing this for creative expression, for no other purpose than sheer joy and creative expression. And by actually moving the camera during the exposure, he is getting effects that no one else is getting, because they're following all the rules.
And it's really, you're working in a mode where the images, the product that you're getting, you can't see at the time that you're photographing it. Because what is really happening is you're mixing the colors and you're mixing the tones in whatever the subject matter is. So if you have a stand, a very simple example would be a stand of vertical trees, you know, big pines or firs or hemlock in a forest. And on the forest floor, there could be green growth. There could be just simply earth with decaying material, which is browns and other tones. And when you move your camera the simplest movement is just a vertical line, a straight line, of course, that's where you start. When you move it, but you include some of that, the ground floor of the forest or the foreground, and you move that up into the trees, you can blend that. It's very difficult to describe in a way. I find it difficult to put into words.
I think I might be able to help a little bit. So let's say you're doing it old school and your camera is on the tripod and you're using a long exposure. Let's say you're shooting water. So if the exposure is 1, 2, 3, 4 seconds, eventually all that water is going to blur together in this smooth effect. So now just take the camera off the tripod. Again, you're using a long shutter speed. And again, you're just going to blur the image somewhat during the exposure. For me, that's kind of how...
That's a very good comparison.
Thank you. For me, that's kind of how I see it. So you're kind of painting in that way, and you know, you're not getting sharpness. Now you're getting pattern. Now you're getting color blends. Now you're getting colors that weren't there before. Now you are creating colors from scratch, without Photoshop, just with your camera. For me, this is exciting. You
know? Well, it's back, like you say, to the old days when you first started into photography. You were able to surprise yourself. Everything was new. Everything was fresh. Everything you tried had the wow feeling to it.
Right.
And this is kind of, for me anyways, this is kind of back to those days. And I'm able to go out now and literally surprise myself. And it's a neat feeling when you've been doing, I've been doing this for 30 odd years now. And you do get to the point where you're repeating the same things over, and it's not fresh anymore.
Right, right.
So to find something that surprises you is a revelation. It's a neat thing to happen. You can actually get to the point where you think, well, what is there out there that I can do that will lift me up, that will give me some inspiration? And sometimes it takes a while to find it, and sometimes maybe people don't find it.
Right.
And I guess I'm lucky that I found this moment and basically went back to what I was doing, in the very early years when it was photography for me was really about the play back then. And I've been able to go back to it. So I'm happy that it's happening. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure.
It gives me a reason to go out and pick up my camera now. And especially, and the funny thing is, I do it in the worst weather. Instead of thinking, well, it's got to be sunny, or I need the certain clouds, or I need a sunset or a sunrise. If it's pouring rain outside, I'm happy as can be, because that's the perfect conditions. When the landscape is wet, it gives me another tool to work with. It gives me the reflection of color on what I'm photographing. And that really is one of the most effective times to do this, for me anyways.
Yeah, and it also has the advantage of the reduced contrast, so your camera can handle the range in the scene.
You get some wonderfully subtle and saturated colors working with wet subject matter. And in my case, it's mostly just the woodlands right around my home here. I don't travel very far. I can literally walk out the door and walk into the woods a few hundred feet from my home and find something to work with. So it's not having to go to Utah or the Grand Canyon or, the Smoky Hills somewhere or the desert. It's right outside my door. And that's a pretty cool thing. It's a nice feeling to have that right there.
Absolutely. For those people that may not be familiar with Michael's work, you could check out Michael Orton in the list of fine art photographers on photography.ca. We're also going to throw up some images in the show notes, and so you'll really get a feel for what this looks like. It's hard to describe because it's sort of abstract looking. But again, basically you're moving your camera during the exposure, and you are going to get some more abstract effects or less abstract effects, depending on how you move the camera, the shutter speed that you use,
what the subject matter is,
what the subject matter is
to work with. Yeah.
Just for those that may not know, what subject matter do you love?
Pretty well all landscape, but it was funny last night when we were out walking around, looking at things.
Yeah.
I got thinking about your situation where you live in Montreal.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, it would be pretty neat to try it on the street in the evening after a rain, when you get all the reflection off the sidewalk and the streets and everything that's there with the street lights. There's that hour or that time in the evening where there's still a little bit of light, but it's down and subdued, and yet the street lights are on. I think you would get some amazing things. I'm actually a little bit excited sort of thinking about possibility of trying it. But in my case, I can't, because where I live, there's no street lights.
Wow.
But where you live, there are street lights.
Which is a good point. You know, we have to use what we have around us. So, I mean, Michael's in beautiful Nanaimo with mountains and flowers and what have you, but if you're in the middle of Paris, then you have other material.
And there's no reason why you can't.
And there's no reason why you can't do this with the Eiffel Tower,
let's
say.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I could, I'm sort of in my mind, I can visualize streets, city streets, not big buildings, but just an ordinary city street with the signs and lights, cars maybe moving. And I could see doing some, getting some neat images at that twilight kind of light. When it's wet would be wonderful, because you get all the lights would reflect off of the wet surfaces.
Yeah.
And moving the camera slightly, you'd get these beautiful streaks and lines. And, you know, with photography, it's sometimes it's just leaving yourself open and trying things, being open to new ideas. And
not being afraid of making mistakes.
Not being afraid and just saying, well, there's no such thing as a mistake. Just tell yourself there is no such thing as a mistake. Everything that you do is going to be an accumulative learning experience. Whether it's right or wrong is beside the point. You will learn from that. And the next time you go out, you will move from that towards another, you know, towards another direction. So yeah, I try not to, that's one of the reasons why I don't really like to be in the position of judging photography.
Right.
I find in a way, I mean, I know that it happens and I know that it's inevitable and the world is constantly judging everything. But in one sense, it's not a way of bringing someone to a point where it's not nurturing their creativeness to tell them that this, you only get 5 points for this, and he gets 10 for his.
Especially with more abstract work.
Yes.
It's harder to be objective with more abstract work.
Yeah. And as you were saying yesterday with this, when you start working with camera movement, you do get a lot of abstraction. Some of the images are, you could say they were impressionistic to the point where you understand what they are and they're more acceptable. So this is kind of, this photography, you're entering into a field where some people will say, yes, it's wonderful, and others will say it's not for me. And that's okay, that's fine.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's really not, that's not the issue here.
No.
It's to the person that created it. That's the only person that it really matters to. If you create something and you look at it and it makes you feel something, then that's it. That's where you get it right there.
Absolutely. Just to take a moment. So I was actually looking at I've seen many of Michael's photographs already, but I was seeing some that I had never seen before last night. Thanks, Michael. the ones that really, it's so personal, like Michael says, you know, the ones that attracted my eye the most, I think, were the ones where there was an element of, I know what that is. It's totally different, but I know what that is. Either it's trees or water or a flower, but that's just my interpretation. That's just me. You know, I'm definitely getting the impression that Michael prefers it to be even more abstract than that. I think Michael likes it more abstract, so you really don't know what's going on. And it's just maybe a play on color, a play on line, a play on composition, a play on blending. And, you know, he's the master of his own photos. So, you know.
Ultimately, it's funny. If someone was talking to me and looking at them, I would rather hear them say, rather than say, that's an amazing photograph, I would like to hear them say, is that a photograph?
Right.
And that's where I'm at.
And I got to say, just on that note, when I first saw Michael's new work maybe 6-7 weeks ago, a smile went just much larger when I found out that there was no Photoshop involved. You're going to check the show notes, you'll see some images, and your first instinct will be, oh, I could do this in Photoshop. No, you cannot, because Photoshop was not used to produce this. It was the camera movement. Michael and Mary, you know, use Photoshop to balance the photo, to do basic corrections, but all the meat is in the camera.
It's already there.
It's already there, you know? So yeah, that's a big thing. And you're, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, you're creating colors that weren't there.
Secondary colors from mixing. It almost is like the primary color chart, where you have your primary colors and you start to blend them together in different ratios. That's exactly what happens when you're out and using raw material. Like I've photographed things like an old stump, an old decaying tree stump, and you would look at it, stand there and look at it and think, well, that's pretty ugly. You know, it's just browns and greens and variations of earth tones. But when you move your camera through those tones, it mixes them almost, yeah. And so you do get back to the element of surprise and the wow, you know, how did this happen? But after you don't really say how did this happen. After a while, you understand how it's happening, and then that becomes your way of seeing. Now when I walk out and I'm looking for raw material, I see those secondary colors before I photograph them now, but it's because I've been working in this fashion, and it's a learned response to what I'm observing, basically.
Right.
And that can come. That's like everything else. Every other skill, everything else you want to do, it comes with time and practice. So if someone wants to do something, whether it's learning tennis or photography, it does take some time and practice, and don't be afraid to do it.
If someone did want to try and play a little bit about this, I guess some basic technical tips, starting with a lower ISO perhaps.
Yeah, I shoot at 100 all the time. Shoot in subdued light. It doesn't have to be overcast and rainy by any means. Like I was saying about street photography, if you live in a city, wait till twilight, you know, and use the a trick that I heard years ago was that photographers, if you want to see in a different way, squint your eyes a little bit, and it will show you the light areas, dark areas. It will give you a different perspective on what you're looking at, rather than you identifying the subject matter as being a car, a street, a tree, a street. You'll see a line, you'll see dark and light areas, and sometimes that helps me to sort of see in a different way,
right?
By doing that kind of defocusing, you know, to look at things. And
exposures are going to be around or vary between.
It depends on the speed you move your camera. I've done camera movement with fairly like an eighth of a second, 16th of a second, right up to 2 and 3 seconds, sometimes even 4 seconds. So it's an absolute variable. The speed that you actually move the camera at is as or more important. You can move it very methodically. I'm constantly using compound movement, which means I'm moving the camera in at least 2 directions at the same time. So sometimes I'll be moving the camera, let's say as an example, in an arc. But in that arc, that smooth arc, I'll be putting a modulating line into that arc so that the camera isn't just moving in a line, it's modulating in a line. And a lot of the time when I find the correct subject matter, I will also be changing the focal length of my lens. And I often go from, let's say, a standard lens, which you would say a 50 millimeter, to a wide angle and somewhere within. But there are no set parameters here. It's absolutely by feel, and it's all handheld. So it's very much like using a brush. And it takes practice and time. When you're doing camera movement also, rehearse the movement before you start making exposures. Get a smooth, fluid movement going that you think you want to use, and then make the exposure as the camera is moving, and keep the camera moving after the exposure is done. So you're not starting with your camera in a stationary position.
It's already moving.
It's already moving, yeah. And just get a very fluid feel for it in your hand. Once again, something that comes with feel and practice. And it's a foreign thing, because we all use tripods so much that as soon as you put it in your hand, it's a different people think, well, I, you know, this is not the way to do it. So
I can attest to the fact that this will need some play and practice. I went out with Michael last night for about an hour while we shot some of these scenes, and Michael came up with good stuff and I came up with bad stuff. But really, it's just a matter of practicing. You know, you can't go out, you know, Michael's been doing this for 30 years. He has the feel. He knows what he's doing. You know, I tried this yesterday, and although, you know, yes, I was able to achieve blur, it was kind of ugly blur.
Well, it was your first time. I mean, I, you know, yeah. I'm sure anybody, I know for a fact that the first time I tried it, I'm sure it was, you know,
yeah.
But it's something, it's kind of like a something that will stick in your head.
Yeah.
And if it stays there, and if it's fun to do, then you will find the time and you will find the way to make it work. And if it's something you want to do, you will find a way around it.
Absolutely.
You know?
What I really like about it, and I think a lot of other people will like about it too, is, you know, there's only so many ways to shoot landscapes and shoot mountains.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about this, I believe it was podcast 67, where we talked with Michael Orton and Darwin Wiggett about the Orton effect, which is an effect that Michael created. We're not going to talk about that now, but we'll put a link in the show notes for you to go listen to it. So Michael's already created a really cool, different way to see things, you know, 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, he's been doing camera movement as well, but now he's kind of gotten into a new zone of artistic.
Yeah, this is taking it to another
level in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I was doing this stuff 20 years ago, and I've looked at some of those old pictures, and they were okay, but I realize now that I'm in a different, I've taken it to a little bit different level.
You know? If you want to check out some of Michael's older work, Michael also has an instructional book where he talks about this a lot, photographing creative landscapes. And a link will go in the show notes as well. So you could see a lot of Michael's older work a little bit and some of his techniques. You know, it's more explained than this short podcast. And, you know, you could take some of those tips and run with them and use them for your own styles, whatever they are. Michael mentioned, you know, street photography using this technique just a few minutes ago. Really, you could have a lot of fun.
I'm looking forward to the pictures you're going to email me now.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not sure how I'm going to run with this, but I'll probably try it. I'll probably try it and see how it goes.
I'm happy that you came. I'm glad to meet you. And it's always nice to have a photographer in the house, and especially to take somebody out on a walk with me, because I'm always on my own. I'm a very solitary kind of photographer, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
And so it was a new experience for me to have someone with a camera with me and have to point out that this is the raw material I would use and this is how I would use it. So that was a new experience for me. So I appreciate you coming and allowing me to do that, because that is really a learning experience for me.
Right.
It reinforces what you know. Yeah, but I'm learning from you and your response to what you see and how you do it. So I'm sort of imagining that myself and saying, yeah, this is okay. This is a learning experience. I can use this in my arsenal of ideas here,
right.
You know? So this is another way for me to try to look at things. So yeah, it's been good that you came and visited, and I hope the rest of your trip goes well.
I hope it does too. If you want to check out more of Michael's awesome work, new website just went up of his a few months ago, michaelortonphotography.com. You will be impressed, especially if you like abstract photography. I've just shown it to a few people already, and it gets the wow factor each and every time. Link will go in the show notes, but if you want to just type it in your browser, michaelortonphotography.com. More of Michael's books will have links in the show notes as well if you wish to purchase them. And I just really want to thank Michael one last time for agreeing to do this, for inviting me into his home. I'd like to thank Mary as well. We had a lovely dinner last night, and it was just a real treat to photograph and to record with you, Michael. So many, many, many thanks.
Thank you so much, Marco. It's been great. I enjoyed it.
And so I'd like to thank Michael Orton one last time for sharing all his great information with us. This is just such fantastic work and knowledge that Michael has shared with us. I know many people are going to be inspired by this, as they were when they discovered the Orton effect 20, 30 years ago. So thanks again, Michael, for being a pioneer in helping so many people develop and explore their own creative photography. In terms of assignments, this month on the forum, our assignment this month is black and white or monochrome. There's already some great submissions, so I do encourage people to join the forum if they haven't already joined. We're a friendly bunch and submit, and those that have submitted can submit again. Our level two assignment is shots taken by window light, which is a very accessible assignment because most people have windows. So get your thinking hats on and submit again if you've already submitted. Subscribing to this podcast is really, really simple via the links on the front page of the blog, photography.ca/blog. And if anyone ever has any trouble, just give me a shout, photography.ca@gmail.com. So hopefully Michael Orton got your creative juices flowing, and it's just another reason to get out there and keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks so much for listening.